lead and guide them in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, Esther 8, power transferred to the synagogue of Satan. You know, in this chapter, Mordecai is going to receive the king's signet, and power is going to be transferred over to him and Esther and the rest of the synagogue of Satan. And they're going to start writing laws. They're going to start spreading fear, and they're going to start forcing conversions. Let's get into the breakdown, Esther 8 breakdown, verses 1 through 2, Mordecai's rise to power, verses 3 to 6, Esther's victimhood status plea, verses 7 through 14, granted free rein on their enemies, 15 to 16, Mordecai dressed in blue and white. Verse 17, the fear of the Jews spreads worldwide. Verse 1, Esther 8. On that day, did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, now that could be anybody, unto Esther the queen, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. On that day, what are we talking about? What day was this? This was the day that Esther had Haman hanged on the 50-foot gallows, okay? That was the marking point or the turning point. Once Haman was killed, once he was assassinated, if you would, that's when the synagogue of Satan's power started getting more consolidated, and to the point where now they're consolidating this power. They're going to make everything they do so-called legal, and then they're going to carry it out. You know, a lot of people talk about America, and they wonder, when was America's power transferred over to the synagogue of Satan? Was there a particular day that that happened? Was there a particular year? Well, a lot of people say that this may have happened when JFK was assassinated. And they think that the deep state or the CIA was involved in it. And some say the trail goes all the way back to the Israeli nation or the Zionist movement. So I want you to think about that. The day that Haman was killed was the day that the house of Haman or anybody who opposes Zionism was given under the power of Mordecai, okay, or Esther at this time. And so in this verse, this is the moment that Esther tells the king that Mordecai is her cousin. And, you know, Mordecai, we remember from the prior chapters, just before Haman was put to death, he had to go through this humiliation ritual where he had to parade around Mordecai in front of the streets and say, "This is the man who the king delights to honor." Okay? And now the king knows that they are related. His wife, the queen, and this heroic Mordecai guy who supposedly saved the king's life because he uncovered an assassination plot. Verse 2, and the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. Okay, so now, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. In chapter 1, and two, we saw Vashti, the moral and dignified queen, get replaced by Esther. And now we are seeing Haman, who used to be a prominent, respected official in the kingdom of Ahasuerus, now he's being replaced with Mordecai. So what do we have going on here? We have a great replacement happening, okay? A replacing of the old order with a new order. Some call it the New World Order. Okay? Think about that. Think about what's happening here. And so the king takes off the ring, or he took off his ring and gives it unto Mordecai. What does that symbolize? That symbolizes power being transferred from the state to the people, to Mordecai and his people. What's he going to do with that power? What do you think he's going to do? Well, the synagogue of Satan doesn't do good things with it. I do want to bring up this quote real quick before I move on. Pat Buchanan seemed to be very keen to what was happening to our nation long ago, long before the Tuckers and the Candace Owens, and I love Tucker and Candace Owens, I'm not mocking them, but long before they started, you know, being awakened to the Zionist movement that's controlling America and the rest of the world, more than likely. Pat Buchanan knew about this. He was America first before everybody else started saying America first. He was make America great again, or put America first, before Donald Trump was saying, let's make America great again. But the difference is I feel like Pat Buchanan actually meant it. Okay. This is a guy that never wavered in his stance or his belief as he stood against the synagogue of Satan. And this is what he was quoted as saying, among many quotes: Capitol Hill is Israeli occupied territory. Okay. Capitol Hill. What's Capitol Hill? Well, it's our seat of government. Back in the book of Esther, it would have been the kingdom of Ahasuerus. Okay. The Mordecai and Esther literally just outnumbered King Ahasuerus, and now they have the power. Okay. Moving on, verse 3. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. All right, it's very curious on how they use the term Agagite here. This is no doubt the writer of the book of Esther did this on purpose, because the Agagites were supposedly a people or a tribe that had crossed Israel, had wronged Israel in the past. And so this is a great way to, if you just label somebody as the Agagite, or you label them as an Islamic extremist, or you label them as this or that, a lot of people will just say, yeah, I don't care what you do, that's the bad guy, just go do it. And that's you could see the craftiness of the writer of the book of Esther, in that they label Haman the Agagite, because then they can put a blood libel upon Haman and say he deserves to die no matter what, because of the ancient curse that was placed upon the Agagites. Okay? That would kind of be like us today being able to label anybody we don't like, as the Canaanites of the Bible. Okay? They're the Canaanites, so we can do whatever we want to them. We can commit genocide. And that's what the modern Zionist movement has been doing continually for a long time. Now, going back to on the day, what was the day that you could pinpoint? And we talked about, a lot of people say it was the day that JFK was assassinated, the day that the deep state took over the presidency, potentially. So regardless of this, I mean, we're talking about that period from 1948 and onward, really, is what we're talking about, is the day that the Zionist movement was given the king's signet, if you would, the king's authority, the authority of the state to do many things that other nations would not be allowed to do. Okay. Other nations would not be allowed to do. All right. Verse 4, then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king. Now she doesn't even have to approach the king and hope that he holds out the golden scepter. Now the king is just, he wants to do whatever he can to help out Esther and her people. So now he's just willingly holding out the scepter, practically begging Esther, "What's your request? What can we do for you? We want to support you in all that we can." Does that not remind you of the Ted Cruzes and the Christian Zionists or the pro-Zionists in our government today? What can we do to support the modern Israeli nation? Who are God's chosen people, by the way, they have no proof of lineage. They have no proof of lineage. You know, we talk about the Ashkenazis make up a great percentage, 90% or 80-something percent of the Israelis, of the modern-day Israelis, and they can't even document their lineage to the tribe of Judah. That should be a big warning sign, should it not? And so this is what we see today. This is what we see going on with our government officials, all the way from the top, the president of the United States. It seems as though they are hell-bent, no pun intended, hell-bent on helping this little tiny nation over, a little tiny nation that's not even any bigger than the state of New Jersey. They're willing to sacrifice everything for America for this little state. Why is that? It's not about the little state, my friends. I know some of our friends get on there and say that, and they're doing it to get you to think. Okay, it's not just about the little state. It's about the new world order, okay? The kingdom of the Antichrist. The geographical location is just a small piece of the puzzle, but it is a statement that can awaken people to wonder. At least it can wake people up and say, hey, why are we supporting a nation that's not even any bigger than the size of New Jersey? And America's a huge nation. What do we care about that? Okay? Because there is a lot more involved than meets the eye. And that's what people start figuring out once they realize it's not just about that little tiny modern state of Israel. It's about worldwide empire and control. Verse 5, and said, "If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the things seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes," this is Esther talking, "let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces." Now, let's just go back here and talk about this. Number one, Haman never killed one person. All right. In the actual story, in the actual fictional account here, he never even actually killed one person. He asked for forgiveness and was denied forgiveness. And so they could have forgiven. If this story was a just story, they could have forgiven Haman and just put an end to this. And just Haman would have said, "Okay, king, reverse all those letters. I was wrong. I was upset that Mordecai offended me, and we're good now." But no, it doesn't work out that way, right? Because Esther doesn't believe in forgiveness. Okay, the synagogue of Satan does not believe in forgiveness. What it believes in is you bowing down before it and then it stealing your soul, okay? And, well, humiliating and destroying you at some point in your life as well if you sell your soul to it, like many of the modern Christian Zionists have done, okay? Selling their soul for the kingdom of the Antichrist under the banner, "I'm a pro-Zionist. I'm a Christian Zionist." There's no such thing as a Christian Zionist unless you're a Christian who believes in New Heavenly Jerusalem, not this attempt to take over Jerusalem by hook and crook in 1948, okay? If you're thinking of Zionism as the time when you look forward to when Jesus returns and wipes out Zion as is now, and rebuilds it, that's okay. The Zionism we're talking about is the Zionism that supports this false regathering, okay? It's a false regathering. The true children of Israel are not regathered. Israel and Judah are not regathered back to the Holy Land or Jerusalem until after the tribulation, until after Jesus returns to destroy the Antichrist and his power. So what is this regathering of the nation of Israel before then? Well, it's not the true nation of Israel. It's the synagogue of Satan, okay? It's all in preparation for the coming of the Antichrist, for the great deception that was written about in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, okay? It's the great deception that Jesus talked about in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. Okay, when he said there would be so much that the Antichrist would sit in the temple and that he was going to, or the abomination of desolation would be placed in the holy place and God would then destroy it. So this is this gathering, the so-called reestablishment of Israel in 1948. Is not something that is sanctioned by God. Okay, it's not a regathering like the regathering that was approved by God during the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, when they were obeying God. I mean, this is a nation that has never repented of its rejection of Jesus Christ. So if you're a Christian, if that's the Zionism you're supporting, you are supporting a false Zionism, a Zionism that leads people to the worship of the Antichrist. And the people you are calling anti-Semites are the true Christians, are the Christians that you would see in the book of Acts resisting the synagogue of Satan, being persecuted by those who claim they are Jews and are not. You're literally going against the church. You've joined the synagogue of Satan. Okay, verse 6. For how, you know, and I want to just say something really quick on verse 5. Lucy loves it. She's our camera woman here today. She loves it when I start reading a verse and then I stop because she's got to go back and forth. One thing that, in interest, just one of the things that before JFK was assassinated, one of the things that he did was he was very much in opposition to, or he sounded the alarm about the Israeli nuclear program as they were developing nuclear weapons. And we know that the Israelis, you know, had spies that stole parts of our secrets of our nuclear program and all these kinds of things. And yet this is our greatest ally, this group that we allow to spy on us. It's not much different than Esther and Mordecai, right? The king thought that Esther and Mordecai were his greatest allies, and that's why he's granted them all this power. But Esther and Mordecai weren't interested in helping King Ahasuerus. They were only interested in advancing their own power, their own authority, at which we are going to see is going to lead to them wanting the power to destroy anybody who opposes them. Okay? And that, is very interesting in light of current events here today. Okay, verse 6. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Now, this is important. This is that same old victimhood cry. Everybody's an anti-Semite. Those Christians that don't support Zionism, anti-Semite. They're probably planning to exterminate us. Tucker Carlson hates all the Jews, okay, when he actually has Jews on his program that don't support the Zionist movement. And so they don't ever talk about that. And they're, you know, this is the cry, though. This is the cry. This is the cry of anti-Semitism. Literally is the shield that protects the Zionists or protects them and enables them free reign to do whatever they want without criticism. Because if you criticize them, you're an anti-Semite, you're a racist, you're a Jew hater. Okay. If you, and so that's how this works. And the whole theme of this book, if they, the key is they have to maintain the status of victimhood. If they lose that status, and they will do anything to keep it, false flags, you name it. If they lose the status of victimhood, they lose all their power. Okay. They lose all their power. And they, and so you'll see this play out today. They will do anything to protect that, to promote that. They will spend billions of millions and even billions of dollars to make sure you see them as the victims, the poor persecuted people who for some reason are persecuted in every country. There's just this hatred that just happens, and all these Hamans out there, all these anti-Semites. You know, there's just one thing I want to remind Christians. Jesus never warned us of anti-Semitism. He never warned us, hey, in the end times, just beware. There are going to be a lot of people are going to just all of a sudden just hate certain peoples. No, he said in the end days, they're going to hate you because the world hated me. In other words, there's only two sides. It's Christians versus the world. There is no special class of somebody in between, okay? Most of the Israelites actually became Christians anyways. They became the Christian nations. And nobody ever talks about that. They only talk about the Jews, which make up a small remnant of the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. But they never talk about the other 10 tribes of Israel that God promised in the book of Hosea would become as numerous, even as he divorced them and sent them into exile to Assyria. He said they would be as numerous as the sands of the sea before he regathers them. So the 10 tribes didn't just disappear from history. They didn't intermix with the Assyrians and are no longer here. No, they're very much here. And they're very much of the true tribes of Israel, and can be documented in many different ways that we don't have time to get into today. But anyways, if you think about this, who are the real victims in the world? It's Christians. You know, and this is really interesting, going back to World War II, and I have to verify this, but I've heard it said by other people that the nuclear bombs that we launched on Japan were, and supposedly this is something that happens over and over again, and we're not aware of it. You know, we're just killing Haman. You know, we're just always killing the Haman, and they deserve it. But you know, in World War II, people are saying that the bombs, can you sit up right, please? That the bombs just talking to my kid here. I'm not chastising another adult. The bombs that were dropped were actually dropped directly on, or at least one of them was dropped directly on a church in Japan, a Christian church. Think about that. And when you think about, and this seems to be playing over in the Israeli occupied territories, the areas that they're going after, and we even saw one of the Israeli soldiers smashing the head of a statue of Jesus. Okay, I don't believe in statues. I don't believe we should be making them. But nevertheless, we see that this seems to be the trend. Whenever we're going after the Haman, a lot of times we're going after and we're attacking and killing Christians first, under the guise that we're getting rid of the Hamans. Interesting. And we talked last week how that there are writings in the synagogue that draw a direct parallel between Jesus and Haman. So many people in the synagogue view Jesus as Haman and Haman as Jesus, prophetically, symbolically, and for all other intents and purposes. So with that key in mind, realize that the ultimate Haman for the synagogue of Satan is Jesus. And who are his 10 sons? I'm getting ahead of myself. That we're going to see in the next chapter. I'm not even going to tell you who are his 10 sons then. If Haman equals Jesus, who are the 10 sons? We'll discover that on Sunday. All right, verse 7. And the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Okay, so Haman was hung, and now the house of Haman or his family and his relatives are under the scope, if you would. They got targets on their backs now. Verse 8, write you also for the Jews as it liketh you in the king's name and seal it with the king's ring. It's kind of like an auto pen or something, maybe. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse. Now let's talk about this. You mean literally Mordecai was given the king's ring and he was given the authority to write any law that he wanted to, sealed in the king's name, given the president's signature. You know, President Trump mocks, he would always mock Joe Biden and say, oh, he didn't even do anything. There was just an auto pen that signed all this. Really? Mr. President, President Trump, how about that auto pen that you keep signing for Zionism? How about that? Okay, do you really control the pen, Mr. President Trump, who seems like he has to do everything that Benjamin Netanyahu wants him to do? Okay, we know what's going on, right? We know what's going on. We see what's happening. Trump mocks everybody prior to the war in that we got ourselves into in Iran over a year ago now, right? If you count the bombing of the nuclear facilities, President Trump would always be mocking how stupid Hillary was, how stupid all of his opponents were for getting us into stupid wars. He basically is saying everything that the true America First people are still saying, but now Trump's hates him for saying what he said. And so are you just an actor? Are you just playing the game? Because it sure seems like it, because you mocked everybody else before you became president. Now you became president and you're signing our whole country away and attacking those of us that are saying, hey, stop doing this. Okay. Auto pen, President Trump's auto pen. Might as well just put a 6-pointed star on it and call it good. Verse 9, then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month. That is the month Sivan. On the 23rd day thereof, 23 means death, by the way. It's a number of Satan. And this is when they were given authority over the law, the synagogue of Satan. And it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews and to the lieutenants. Remember, we're talking about fake Jews. Mordecai and Esther are not true Jews, right? They're Babylonian gods, goddesses. And to the lieutenants and to the deputies and rulers of the provinces, which are from India unto Ethiopia, and 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their language, and according to their language. In other words, these laws are now going out worldwide in Mordecai's name. Mordecai's making the laws. The king's rubber stamping them. He says, just do whatever you want, Mordecai, and it's good on me. Okay? Do whatever you want, and it's good on me. Now, this is what you would call a new world order. Okay, a new world order. I will say this. When we start seeing talk of anti-Semitism laws that are designed to say you're hateful, you're a bigot for speaking out against the modern state of Israel or the Zionist movement or false religions connected thereto, you're seeing something very close to what we're reading here in verse 9. Letters going out worldwide giving the synagogue of Satan power and authority. Verse 11, wherein, this is what was contained in the letters, wherein the king granted the Jews, and they're not the real Jews, wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Literally, this decree was permission to the synagogue of Satan to commit genocide against any people who opposes them. Worldwide. What are we talking about here? We're talking about the kingdom of the beast, the kingdom of the Antichrist. The Bible uses symbolism, my friends. Okay? And there are many parables and hidden things. We are seeing an exact overlay of how the beast exercises its authority in the future. And it's going to be, if you don't take the mark of the beast, okay, which is the number 666, six-pointed star and all that. If you don't take that mark of the beast, it's written in Revelation 13, you won't be able to buy or sell, and they will even seek to kill you for not taking the mark of the beast. Okay, so this is the actual decree, I think, at least. Maybe not the actual decree to take the mark of the beast, but it is the decree that leads up to it. And we're seeing it. It's very alarming. You know what I will say? We're talking about how the king just tells the synagogue of Satan, tells Mordecai, you just make any law you want and I'll rubber stamp it. Did you know there is a law being written right now, or it's going to be soon be voted on, that literally by all practical purposes and all practical functions combines or intertwines the United States military with the Israeli military. In other words, if this gets signed, it's like you basically, the militaries become one. Israel and America become one and we lose our sovereignty. And do you think our president already doesn't have much control today, right? But he would really officially have, there would be so much red tape and so many legalities that the president would literally lose power to, complete power to the deep state. And why would they do that? Well, what if we get another president, somebody other than Trump, that's not willing to support the synagogue of Satan? Well, they want to make it very difficult for that to happen. Let's say we vote somebody in. There's a big movement. They get this bill passed. It would take decades or longer to try to undo the interconnectedness that this bill supports. Okay. So they're building a foundation for the future is what they're doing. Verse 12. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day, now we got the number 23 now, it means death. We got the number 13, that means kind of the same thing, evil, rebellion, of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given, notice a commandment, not God's, nothing about God's commandments in this book, just commandments of Mordecai. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, the new world order. And I'll just go back to me. A lot of people say that the New World Order is a Zionist New World Order. That's what it is. And that seems to be what we're seeing here in the book of Esther, is it not? The copy, we'll go back to the verse. The copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, and that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. Okay, the law was written to basically give the synagogue of Satan free rein to kill and to destroy anybody who opposes them. And we see the poor sucker Christians like Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee, they're literally doing the work for them. They're preparing the way. You might as well say they are the false John the Baptist preparing the way for the Christ? No, preparing the way for the Antichrist. Verse 14, so the posts that rode upon the mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment. All the news agencies carry forth. It's getting disseminated. Zionist controls news networks. And the decree was given at Shushan, the palace. You know what's interesting is it seems like America's being converted into something like Shushan the Palace. Trump, you know, Shushan the Palace, all of the activity was from the very beginning, you know, when Vashti was removed, it all happened in the banquet hall or this ballroom, this fancy ballroom where that was used to seduce the politicians and the kings of the world. Okay. So now Trump wants to make this ballroom. He wants to make this a triumphal arch or arc, whatever you call it, to be aligned with the White House or with some other kind of monument that looks exactly like the Ishtar Gate or the Gate of Babylon. And on the list goes. It really literally feels like Trump's remaking America into this kingdom of Ahasuerus, if you would. The kingdom that granted the synagogue of Satan all this power and authority. Verse 15, and Mordecai, remember Marduk, the Babylonian god, that's who Mordecai is, went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. Now, I'm going to point out here in a minute that this is a contradictory statement in itself, because here it says that now the city, because Mordecai was dressed in royal apparel, that everyone was full of joy and happiness. This is like the best moment that could have happened, right? But the problem is, later in a couple of verses, we're going to read that there was great fear among all of the people. How can you have fear and joy at the same time? Okay. Well, you can't, right? This isn't true joy. This is just joy for the kingdom, for these Babylonian gods disguised as Hebrews. Okay. I want you to notice something here. In this verse, it gives us a clue as to another clue to parallel this to the modern state of Israel and Zionism. What colors did Mordecai come out wearing? What was he arrayed in? Blue and white. What are the colors of the Israeli flag? Blue and white. What star is on that flag? It's blue and white. What star is on it? Well, Esther means the hidden star. Okay? And anything with 6 points is probably not a star from God, because we know the mark of the beast is, the number of the beast is 666. Well, the six-pointed star on that flag has 6 points, six sides, and six angles, okay? You know, there's sixes all over that. It's designed to be the emblem that represents the number six. All right, verse 16. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. A new world order. Now you know what that new world order is all about. Verse 17. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Wow, that doesn't seem right. That should, any Christian should be like, whoa, the gospel era. You know, it's the love of Jesus that is making people convert. Here, it's the fear of the Jews that are converting people. It's not a genuine conversion. People aren't saying, hey, I want to convert to Judaism or Zionism or whatever because my heart tells me to. No, this tells us that people are converting to Judaism or converting to whatever the Zionists are telling us to do. They're converting to that because they're scared. They're scared of what? Scared to lose their job? Scared to be called an anti-Semite? Scared that they might be next? And so it's very convenient. I mean, if you see that all of a sudden all these laws are being made to protect this group, to advance this group of people, now the easy thing to do is just say, I'm one of them. Or at least you could say, I support them, right? I'm a Christian Zionist. I'm a pro-Zionist. That's the easy thing to do. But did the disciples do that? Did the disciples of Jesus Christ convert or renounce Christ or convert to some other kind of modified version of the gospel because they feared the scribes and the Pharisees, the Jewish leaders? Did they convert? No, they didn't. So what do we have here? We have people converting away from Christianity to the synagogue of Satan in this verse here. Because again, Esther is Mystery Babylon. That's what her name means. Ishtar, Mystery Babylon. And Mordecai means Marduk, the chief political god of Babylon. So if you're converting over to Esther and Mordecai, their beliefs, their system, you're converting over to the synagogue of Satan, Satan's system, the kingdom of the Antichrist. All right, I'm going to go over this really quick, and we're going to wrap this up. I have a chart here, and we can just go to that chart. Thank you. And we got it's the fear of the Jews. It's interesting. This phrase is not just used in the book of Esther, though it's used several times in the book of Esther, but it's also used in the New Testament. Esther 8:17, it's used, for the fear of the Jews had fallen on them. And what was the effect of that? Many people declared themselves Jews out of fear after the signet ring transfer. Esther 9 verse 2, it says, for the fear of them had fallen on all peoples. No one could withstand the Jews on their day of victory, that day of Purim, okay, the day that the New World Order comes into being. Verse 9, verse 3, we're going to get into next week. For the fear of Mordecai had fallen on them. We see that the Persian officials helped the Jews because they feared Mordecai. John, in the New Testament, John 7:13, we see this phrase, for fear of the Jews. And we find out that people were afraid to speak openly about Jesus because of the fear of the Jews. That's in the New Testament. Then in John 19, verse 38, we see that phrase used again, for the fear of the Jews, when Joseph of Arimathea had to secretly ask for the body of Jesus because he feared the Jews. John chapter 20, verse 19, the disciples, for fear of the Jews, the disciples locked the doors after the resurrection for fear of the Jews. Okay, we can come back to me now. So we see here in the New Testament, in the Gospels, and you're going to even see this in the book of Acts, that there was this fear of the synagogue of Satan, not the true Jews, not the true Judah, but of the synagogue of Satan who said they were Jews and are not, are of the, but do lie, like Jesus said in Revelation 2:9 and 3:9. So this is in the New Testament. And so when we read, when we see that this phrase is bad, right? It's not a good thing. Well, silly Christians today that are, should know the New Testament are going back to the book of Esther, and they're thinking this is a good thing. That now every, that there's this fear out there, and you know, we're combating anti-Semitism, and this is a good thing because we don't want hate. But they never talk about Christian persecution. They never ask questions. Why are we in World War II when we bomb Japan or other countries? Why are we? Why is the target the church? The first thing. And I'll ask you: is it part of some kind of a bigger satanic ritual led by the synagogue of Satan? That when they do these things, they everything is significant. They're not just throwing a, hey, let's not, we're just going to bomb this city because of this. No, they pick certain dates, certain locations, certain times for a specific reason. And that reason often involves some kind of a grand satanic ritual to be fulfilled that supposedly gives them great power and authority from the unseen world, which we know as the demonic world. With that said, we will take questions and comments if we got them. Questions and comments.
Vince says 3178 days, or yeah, 3178 days from September 23, 2007, Revelation 12 sign, man child to the 6th of June in Greek and Hebrew concordance is Jalil. Those people waiting to enter the promised land or drunkenness.
Okay. I'd have to look deeper into that. Interesting. Okay. Did we have any more?
Yeah. R. Prevost says, John Hyrcanus forced conversions to Judaism on the Edomites and the Samaritans. He also took over the capital of Samaria and destroyed their temple around 100 BC.
Okay, so in history, Ron's pointing out in history, back around 100 BC, that there were forced conversions to Judaism. Interesting.
He also says, some people suggest that the enemy was present for decades and infiltrated our government in the 1860s. A lot to unpack. There is a lot to unpack if you look into it. But yes, the 1960s were similarly prominent.
Yeah, you could, absolutely right. I mean, the tares have always been hidden among the wheat. So the evil forces really have been working on America since America's inception, even if you would. But you know, we're looking at big proclamations, big turning points that, the book of Esther could be related to something in our lifetime or something, you know, certain years. But definitely they've been there all along doing their thing. They have been since the serpent seed has been working against the woman seed since Genesis chapter 3:15, since Cain got banished from Eden. Since he killed Abel and then banished from Eden. Good point. Yeah, a lot of different turning points in history.
He also says, good point on the six-pointed star. As with the five-point star, the Satanists use inverted for their goat idol.
Yeah, yeah. And that seems to be like the, you know, the Pentagon. I know the Pentagon, I think, was, I don't know, was that built in the 60s? The building that we know of today, that we call today the Pentagon, the headquarters of our military. Why would it be in the shape of a, you know, in a shape that is associated with Satanism? You know, some could argue that it's just a star and so on and so forth, but it is something to be aware of. Yep. Any more? Oh, we got a brave one in the house. The youngest ones, the bravest one.
Why did Satan want the number six?
Why did he want the number six? You know, so six originally was like the number of man, okay? Because man was created on the sixth day. So I think Satan likes the number six because, and why he uses it three times, 666, because when you triple a number, you make it like divine, okay? You make it something greater than it was. And so 666 seems to be a number that represents man as God, or the man as God, which, you know, be the Antichrist or, you know, Satan himself, who believes he's God, a created being, something of creation. Number six also is a number of creation. It's literally making the creation God, something of the created order, God other, you know, rather than God. So it's, you know, it's idolatry, it's false worship of man, all those kinds of things.
Why did Jesus want the number seven?
The number seven, is a number that means spiritual completeness. Why did Jesus like the number seven, or why does God's word use the number seven in a positive sense? I don't know exactly. I just know that God's ordered everything around seven. Seven is the number of the Sabbath. The seventh day is when all of creation was done and there was no more creating. It was the day of rest or enjoyment. Then there are seven seals, seven trumpets, seven vials in the book of Revelation. There are seven mighty archangels. The Lamb of God has seven horns in the book of Revelation. So seven just seems to be a unique number that God likes. And it's interesting, it's made up of 3 plus 4. Okay. Three means, like we think of the Trinity, the Father, Son, it's the Godhead. Three combined with the earth. It's maybe combining God's control over the earth. We could go in and I could do a whole bunch of mathematical formulas up here to try to answer that question, but it just seems to be a number God really likes. Mm-hmm. A natural number. Yes.
Why do the Jews like the color blue and white? They're like.
Okay, so why? So when you say Jews, I want to qualify those of Revelation 2:9 and 3:9 like it, right? Mm-hmm. Because there are true Jews or true people of the tribe of Judah that don't like that, right? They're not a Zionist. Why do they like blue and white? That is a good question. I sat and pondered that. There definitely is a reason. There is a reason, and that's a great question, and I don't know the answer to that. We'll have to try to figure that out. There's something about it. Blue is water. White might be light or purity. I don't know. We'd have to really start digging in. You stumped me. Good job. A+ extra credit for today.
So where do you think the 10 lost tribes of Israel are today?
So the 10 lost tribes of Israel, when they went into the Assyrian captivity, they were separated from the kingdom of Judah that later became known as Jews. The Israelites were never called Jews, by the way, the kingdom of Israel. So 10/12 or more of the tribes of Israel were never called Jews. Sure, there were some, maybe a couple, there was a few people from maybe Issachar or something like that that decided to move among the Jews, and they were called Jews. But the bulk, the main body of the Israelites were never called Jews. And so they migrated north. The Assyrian kingdom was north of Israel. They were taken into captivity there. They were removed from Israel. The Assyrians came in, took them captive, and they said, hey, we're taking you. They took them out of Samaria, which was their capital. They took out the true Israelites, brought them to Assyria, and then brought in other people from Assyria and put them in Samaria. So they put pagans in there or non. And so they totally, it'd be like today, some China coming. It was kind of weird. I had some kind of a weird sour pickle dream last night that was happening. They were coming to America and they were taking Americans and taking them to China and then transferring other people into our land. Not saying that was a vision from God. I'm just saying it was a weird dream I had. And I was trying to stay here and not get taken. But anyways, where are they today? Well, they went north over from the Assyrian captivities. They went north over what's called the Caucasus Mountains, right, like kind of the bridge going into Europe from the Middle East. They went north into Europe, and they stayed together in different tribes and stuff like that, and they became the European nations. And then when the gospel came, the Apostle Paul and other people took the gospel right to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They were known as Gentiles at that time because God had divorced them, but they were the Israelites, and then they became Christians. So they never regained the name Israel. They just went by, we're Christians, we're followers of Christ. And that's why the world doesn't know that the Caucasian peoples from Europe are from the 10 tribes of Israel. And they far outnumber the Jews, or they far outnumber the kingdom of Judah. That's a small group, right? You're talking millions. We're talking into the millions, or maybe at one point the Caucasians made up about 10% of the Earth's population, which doesn't seem like a lot. When you grow up in America and you grew up here in the 60s or whatever, it would seem like the whole world was like you, but they're not. At the greatest, the Israelites only made up about 10% of the world's population. So where are they today? They are the Native Americans from 1776. They are the Europeans from the Christian nations. And it's interesting that we, as the true Israelites, are being asked to support by Zionists like Ted Cruz to support the modern Israeli state, who can't document their lineage to Israel. They don't actually fit any biblical markings of Israel, and yet we do. It's all over America and Europe. We are the Israelites, and we're being told to support something else that we don't know what it is, and it's not even people that it's not even a movement that accepts Jesus as Lord. Yes. Did you have a follow-up, Joshua? Okay. Good question.
There's one online. Grania said, who do you think is the Antichrist? I think he is Satan himself.
Okay, so that's a good question. I belong to in the mid to late 1990s, early 2000s, I was part of a ministry that believed the Antichrist was Satan himself. And they're pretty adamant about that. And I'm not in disagreement with that. I believe that in the book of Revelation, we have the dragon, which is Satan himself. Then you have the beast and the false prophet. Okay, the false prophet is another type of a beast. And I think they make up sort of an unholy trinity, if you would. So I think that the Antichrist is literally of the seed of the serpent, like Jesus was, the true Messiah was the seed of the woman. So I do believe the Antichrist, or that role of the beast, will be will be a man, maybe half human, half Satan, half angelic, whatever, some kind of a Nephilim, just like Jesus was half man and half God.
So you think it's kind of like three in one, but like not?
I think it's a counterfeit Trinity, yeah.
So kind of, but just not?
Well, kind of, but not. Like, so Jesus was God in the flesh. Because he says, I am, he went and said, I am that I am in the New Testament. And that was the name that God gave to us in the Old Testament to Moses. And he did many other things that only God could claim to do and be. And so we know that Jesus was God in the flesh, yet he's the Son of God.
So do you think the Antichrist would be of the serpent seed?
Yes. And so just to clarify what I'm saying, I believe Satan will be here as the dragon. Okay. Like Revelation chapter 12 says that, but I believe that there's more to the Antichrist than just Satan. He's got a false Trinity. So I think that the Antichrist figure would likely be, Satan himself incarnate, if you would. I don't think incarnate. I think it would be a serpent seed man with Satan's spirit heavily on him. But Satan being here, guiding, giving the beast his power and his authority. And then there's even this false prophet that works in that same unholy Trinity. So
yeah.
So I agree and disagree with that, I guess, to answer that. I agree and disagree.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Nope. Okay. Well, with that said, we want to thank everybody for joining us. We want to let everybody know we've been updating our website. There are a lot of new features on there and a lot of new ones being built. For instance, the Book of Esther. There's a landing page now for the Book of Esther that has every study we've done up to this date. And we have at least one PDF file that you can download from there of the parallels between Esther and Mystery Babylon, and we're going to put other ones that we've done thus far on there. So there'll be other study resources on these pages, and we're working to try to do the same thing for, I think we got about 15 books of the Bible done since the year 2011 or something like that. And we're going to try to build a dedicated page for each book of the Bible that we have done and that we will do, and put in their helpful study aids, as well as archives to, you could either watch on YouTube, Rumble, or even an audio MP3 option. So we're trying to make our site very useful. And we're also thinking about the future when we're doing this, because we're thinking, hey, there's a lot of censorship that may be coming up. We could get kicked off of YouTube. We could get kicked off of Rumble. The last thing that would go would be our website. And then from there, it would have to be in-person type stuff. But so we're designing our website, trying to remodel our website to withstand the coming censorship that no doubt will come. So go to ChristianOvercomers.com and explore it there. And again, we are currently building some of those features out. So be patient with us as we do that. With that said, stay in His Word every single day so that you can be a Christian overcomer. God bless. Great sign burning in the sky, woman crying, crowned with light. Dragon waiting at her feet, teeth like night, heart for a spite. Child is carried to a throne, war breaks out above this world, earth opens like a shield.